VentureCast.
I'd say Lombard is probably the most photographed street in America. Everyone goes to San Francisco and takes a picture of that street.
I don't think they do anymore. Maybe they still do.
Really?
Oh, the plane. You're bringing the yokel, man. You are bringing the yokel so hard. You're like, when I come from Asheville, I see the twisty street. And I'm like, hold your phone. Get it out, honey.
I have to take a picture home of this thing.
It's all hilly with a big twist.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Fellas, what is happening? It is Memphis Town. We are going to
yes.
It is Memphis and other parts of Tennessee. Since we covered Nashville. We gotta cover.
That's not what we agreed to.
There's a Chattanooga choo-choo waiting for us to mention it. Jeff Simons, how are you in Berkeley?
Fine. I'm fine. I am completely overwhelmed and stressed out from work today, so I need this. But
okay.
For the purposes of this podcast, I am fine.
Oh, boy. Ben Barton, did you get all that grading done in Knoxville?
I got all of the grading done.
Nice.
So very pleased with that. Gave back the exams. So now I have nothing but meetings with people wanting to talk about the exams. So,
oh, okay.
Fun never ends.
Good stuff there. Welcome to 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys on the Electrocast Podcast Network. Here in season 3, we are on a musical road trip. And we've just done, a 3-hour trip across Tennessee to Memphis? How far is it?
From Nashville, it's 2.5-3, depending on how fast you go. And
okay.
From Knoxville to Nashville is another 2.5-3. But it's
okay.
Far. It's that'll be something that I cover, is that Memphis is far from, like, East Tennessee and West Tennessee are far apart.
Yeah, two different states almost.
It's like SF to LA in terms of drive time.
Yeah.
No, you can drive to Chicago or Memphis in about the same amount of time from Knoxville.
Oh, that's insane. That? Huh. Good stuff. Well, real quick off the top, a shout out to the robot lady. My lovely wife pulled off an amazing, amazing surprise. She took me out to dinner in Asheville, North Carolina, and then three gentlemen, and I use that word loosely, from Boston sat down. My three best friends from back home sat down and whisked me away for the weekend. Unbelievable.
That's awesome, Timmy. I love it.
Yeah. Really great.
What were you guys up to?
We played some golf, played a lot of shuffleboard, a lot of spades. We did imbibe a little bit, and we brainstormed about this show, and there may be a new segment coming up, not this week, but the next week. We'll see what you guys think.
That segment is called Ben and Jeff Are Replaced by Tim's Other Friends.
Yeah, I was going to say... You're telling us this on the air? Was your trip, which of the three movies I'm going to name was your trip most like? Was it most like Deliverance or Stand By Me or Caddyshack 2?
It was Caddyshack 2. Yeah. Okay.
With the Bachelor Party for sure.
Bachelor Party.
And the spice of the day
Tom Hanks' most underrated moment.
All right. Well, here we are arriving in Memphis, Tennessee, the busiest cargo airport in the world there at Memphis. And this is the song we've got playing as we arrive. Boom.
Boom.
When we got to the bathroom, we didn't go back to her place. We went to some place where she can't sit.
She said, I know I look tired, but everything's fried here in Memphis.
Woo-hoo! Damn, I love that one.
I know, yeah. I look tired, but everything is fried here in Memphis. Jeff Simons, have you been to Memphis, Tennessee?
I have been to Memphis, Tennessee.
How many times?
Just once.
Okay, Ben Barton?
I have been multiple times. I have a great one when I went as a college kid right after graduation, and then I've been there as a professional, and then I've been there with my family. And
all right.
I have a lot of good things to say about Memphis, Tennessee.
I do, too. I think it's terrific. I went as a young adult, went to Beale Street, went to clubs, heard some music. It was great. But then going with the kids, driving cross country. And the thing that kills me, underneath the bridge, crossing the Mississippi River, they have a model of the Mississippi River. And you can walk along this, you know, much smaller scale Mississippi River all the way from where it begins to where it ends. And the water in the model is the Mississippi River.
Oh, it's very meta, Tim. I like
it's
it.
So meta. So great.
Yeah, that was like invented for a plane family vacation. That little stop right there. That it has learning. It has meta. It's cute. It's perfect.
Good. Yeah, good times. Jeff, when did you go to Memphis?
I can't even remember. It was one of my many treks across the country.
Okay.
I need to go back. I went because I wanted to go. And I think it was by myself when I drove across one of those like early summers where I had nothing to do. So I just drove myself across the country back to see people.
Well, jumping into the research, it's I was once again overwhelmed. It's like, oh, this is just like Nashville. There are so many acts to cover. And for the compilation Torture Basement, so many songs that mention Memphis.
Rich Lowe. We're in big trouble.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, we're not going to do well tonight. I'm noticing that the one I was counting on being in there as a gimme was the fly-in song. So we're already one down.
Yeah, that's a Timmy classic, by the way. The one that he knows will know, he just yoinks right away.
Hey, Memphis is called the home of the blues. Any beef with that claim? Or are you guys giving Memphis the home of the blues? Because Chicago would have a claim, would they not?
Memphis is better off than Chicago is. But I mean, it's basically, so the Delta blues is not a city music.
Right.
So you could just choose Mississippi generally.
Okay.
But yeah, if you're going to choose a single metro area to draw it in, Memphis has got a good claim. New Orleans has a decent claim. But, you know, basically kind of a joke, but also descriptive. They say Memphis is the biggest city in Mississippi, and it kind of is. Like, it's kind of the capital of that entire region.
Yeah, oh, that's really neat. Neat way to look at it. Is it also the birthplace of rock and roll?
That's tight.
Delta 88 is recorded there, no? Or was it Rocket 88?
I thought that was from St. Louis. Is that from Memphis? I might be wrong about that.
Wait,
I don't think there's a birthplace of rock and roll. You could, I mean, anybody can name it. That's fine. But happening all around. It's happening in so many different places all at the same time, you know?
I messed up. Rocket 88 is the song. My buddy Jay, when we were in high school, had a Delta 88. So
I was gonna
So yes. Close. So close.
Are you still recovering from your weekend? Is that what's going on? A little fuzzy?
Just a little bit.
I've been with that cohort. It almost killed me the one time I tried to stay toe to toe with you guys. So I know what you were up against.
Ben, Jeff began writing a letter as he got into bed, reciting the letter out loud. Dear Budweiser, your product is poison.
It really was tough.
I wish you
after my
that.
17th Bud Light, I gave in, and these guys were like, "What? Are we supposed to finish this whole case by ourselves?"
All right, gentlemen. Beale Street is in Memphis. I'm going to argue that that is one of the top five most famous streets in America. Let's go back and forth playing categories, famous streets in America, and then we'll put Beale Street in its proper place. Go ahead. Famous street. Jeff, you go
Broadway,
first.
Broadway, New York City.
Broadway, New York City, Ben. Wall Street, New York City. Back to Ben.
Sunset Boulevard, Los Angeles.
Oh,
Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C.
Good. You guys are good.
Miracle Mile in Chicago.
Excellent.
Oh, that was good. I'll go with Melrose Avenue in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And this is a tight one, and they'll be mad at me in Memphis, but Bourbon Street in New Orleans is actually a more famous strip of nightclubs even than the strip of nightclubs on Beale Street.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
It's probably right. Probably right. Good one. Jeff, are you out? There's a pretty famous street in San Francisco.
Yeah, which one do you think it is? Market or Lombard?
Lombard?
Yeah, but that's so annoying.
And Ashbury are streets, right? Couldn't, I mean, is that... You
yeah,
can't
but
that?
The corner is what's famous. I guess Haight Street.
Yeah.
I think Beale Street probably wins, like, is a little ahead on that one.
I'd say Lombard is probably the most photographed street in America. Everyone goes to San Francisco and takes a picture of that street.
I don't think they do anymore. Maybe they still do.
Really?
Oh, the plane. You're bringing the yokel, man. You were bringing the yokel so hard. You're like, when I come from Asheville, I see the twisty street. And I'm like, hold your phone. Get it out, honey.
I have to take a picture home of this thing.
It's all hilly with a big twist.
Oh, San Francisco.
So Beale Street's wow. Top 10, then. That's
I think
good.
It is. I think it's top 5. I'm throwing that out there. I'll stick with it. All right. Let's get to our FedEx questions of the day. Where did FedEx begin? We know it's headquartered in Memphis, Tennessee, and I'll give you three choices. Did it begin in Little Rock, in Birmingham, or in Louisville?
No clue. Help us.
Yeah, no idea.
I mean, there are three guesses. Three guesses. You can just throw a dart. Thank you, Little Rock.
I'll say Louisville.
And Ben Barton, you get a win. Just like
damn.
That.
How about that, Jeff? Put that in your pipe. I knew that one. You see how good I was?
Just for trying. He's getting points. All right. Once again, three choices. When did FedEx begin? 1958, 1964, or 1971?
1971.
I'll take the 64.
Jeff is correct.
That's here's a good no one. Like
that's a pre-moon. That's not a pre-moon landing company, I don't think.
I thought you were going to lord it over Ben like he did to you. You're so much nicer.
Jeff is so used to winning. I mean, it's not. It's like a big brother, little brother thing.
Exactly. Like if I'm like Purdue to Ben's Farley Dickinson University.
Oh, no, he's the total, or he's the Yankees and I'm the Mets. He doesn't even notice that I'm around.
Oh, yeah, we got to end our podcast tonight with a little NCAA talk. That'll be the end. But right now we got to get to the torture basement. Jeff Simons, I'm going to ask for you guys to guess 10 out of 15 tonight.
That's generous.
15 clips. You come up with the names of 10 of the artists.
Oh, God. All right, here we go.
You might be in trouble.
I have no doubt. Here we go. You ready, buddy?
Let's do this.
If you love somebody enough,
I know that
you'll
one.
Follow wherever they go. That's how I got to Memphis. My whole world's a blue-eyed girl in Memphis. Memphis in June, and my cousin Miranda. I had one too many drinks, and ended up at the embassy.
That's what I'll do. Come on, Memphis. I can't go back to Memphis.
That's a rough one in the torture basement.
That's a bloodbath.
That is a bloodbath. Let's take a quick break for an ad as they listen to it one more time. Hey, all right. The Last Train to Memphis. That's the last song here in the torture basement where I did let you off. I came in hard, but those last five, I think you got. So that should have given
for a
you
lot of familiar sounds.
A little boost there at the end. All right. Who wants to offer their first guesses? Go back and forth.
The first song is Tom T. Hall. That's how I got to Memphis.
That is correct. Tom T.
Damn,
Hall.
Damn, Jeff. Damn.
I love that song.
That's a good start.
That's a good song.
That second voice is so familiar. And I have two guesses. Can I do one guess and then the other guess?
Ben, do you feel it's familiar as well? Number two.
I have a guess, but I'm going to let Jeff go first. His guess.
Oh, okay. Well, can we talk it through? I think it's either Vicki Lawrence or Bette Midler. Who did you think it was?
Oh, I thought it was an African American. I thought it was Aretha.
I think it's Vicki Lawrence or Bette Midler.
Go ahead with Bette Midler then. That's fine.
We're going with Bette Midler.
Old Fred Bette Midler, yeah.
Is that from the Rose?
I don't know. I don't think so. It's from a live album of some sort, but that is Bette Midler indeed.
That was some get right there.
You may remember her from season one.
X? The third one's X, right?
No. Any guesses for the third one, Ben?
Nothing.
This one was the impossible one. This is Lisa Marie Presley.
Ah, yes. Okay, well then. I'll be okay with that. It had that kind of fourths and fifths thing that John Doe and Exene do. I thought it was maybe some X song. I didn't know.
I think they were just
I have no idea
voice.
Who the finger picker is. Is it Gene Vincent, number four?
No, Ben. Any guesses on number four?
No, that's idea.
Charlie Sexton.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You've gotten that. Then we've got the country song, My Whole World's the Something Something.
Blue-Eyed Girl in Memphis.
I'm going to guess Johnny Cash.
Yeah, good guess.
It is Conway Twitty.
Conway Twitty, nice. Hold on, I think I got the next one.
You got Memphis in June? Talk to me.
I'm pretty sure that's Nina Simone.
That is correct, Nina Simone.
Yes, the man!
Excellent.
I have no idea what one too many drinks ended up at the embassy is, but that is...
That was fantastic.
What is that?
Your boy Kanye West has a hand in that, Ben Barton. But that is
it's the guy. It's the Ray Charles, Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx and Kanye West putting out an album together. That's a great
did not
line.
Give that one.
No, not giving that to you.
The next one is Elvis.
Great.
And how could you do the Elvis one and not the Chuck Berry one?
Because I wasn't going to do Elvis for the favorite son. So I'm like, oh, I got to get him in here. But now I've switched. You bullied me. Anyways, the Chuck Berry one was originally on my list. Look, you can even see it on the news. Never mind. All right, next.
This next one is horrible, though. You got to move to Memphis. I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea.
That was Aha.
Oh, my God. They have another song?
I didn't know that either.
They're Swedish, right?
They are. Yeah. They got to move to Memphis, though.
So some others, they were like, get out the map and choose a funny sounding town.
Yeah.
And they're like, how about St. Louis? They're like, too long. That's two words. We can't use that. And they're doing this all in Swedish. They're like, no, not okay. I mean, it's like, how about Memphis?
Four. Is that correct? We have four.
We got more than four, don't we?
You have four correct. You got
to
go on a little bit.
Run the table.
You got to run the table. Do you want to skip this one and come back to it?
No. Is this the Can't Go Back to Memphis?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have any.
There's a Stray Cat song that's right in here.
It is the Stray Cat.
That's what I thought it was. That's what I thought it was.
Ben Bart. Well, oh man. All right.
I wasn't sure if it was Stray Cats or Brian Setzer. I love
it. You
guys
might have it now.
Okay, then we got Dylan stuck inside a mobile. Then
Lucinda Williams, yep.
Then Mark Cohn walking in Memphis. Then Joe Jackson's Memphis. And is it NRBQ doing Honky Tonk Piano at the end, or is it somebody else?
Oh, wait. I thought maybe it was Rufus Thomas.
Go with Rufus Thomas.
Then. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And you chunk it on the last one. That is the band taking the last train to Memphis.
God, I don't recognize that at all. That's embarrassing, though. We should have gotten that.
Wow.
9 out of 10 is not bad for that. That was really hard.
That was some heat, Timmy, but I like your style.
That was heat.
Yeah, if you can find a compilation that has Aha and Lisa Marie Presley and Jamie Foxx, you got to take it. You got to take it.
I'm proud of that 9. That was a, like, that was a 16 seed 9 right there. Bringing it in.
All right, well, we're going to hit the favorite son or daughter song. I originally had in here a little Johnny Cash, but maybe he'll be pushed to later. And instead, Elvis Presley is our guy. Correct?
Okay, sorry.
Nope.
Yes, my browser just closed. So talk amongst yourselves while I pull up this wonderful Elvis Presley song.
Ben Barton, why do I dislike Elvis Presley and so many people adore him?
Really? You're supposed to be the voice of the people. You don't like Elvis?
I know. Isn't that strange?
Let's listen a little bit and then we'll come back.
But do you like Elvis?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh. I thought you were supposed to be the snob.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me when you don't believe a word I say? We can't go on together with suspicious minds, and we can build our dreams on suspicious minds.
Woo! I mean,
so there are reasons not to like Elvis. He definitely like stole black music, and not a little bit, like a lot.
Okay,
a lot of it.
He also didn't write a lot of the stuff, and he was kind of a little bit of a front man, self creation. All of that being said, it's fucking awesome, fucking awesome. Like the Elvis Greatest Hits, like it's just one banger after another, 1 2.5 minute just fantastic song. I took the girls to go see the Elvis biopic.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I was so livid. I was so mad. So there's a half an hour or so of him growing up in poverty, which is interesting. Then there's a half an hour where he's Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan. He's the biggest star in the world.
Okay.
And they just blow through that in 25 minutes. And then they're like, here's an hour and 20 minutes of a fat guy taking drugs in Vegas. I'm like, what are we doing here?
That's really unfair. That is really not right.
What part of this story is more interesting to you? Like, I understand that the dramatic part of it is like the fall into dying.
Yeah, sure.
But help a brother out. Yeah. The girls were like, I don't even know why people like him. I was like, that's because you didn't even help at all with that.
That's
yeah,
right.
I mean, I don't
that's
love Elvis. The thing I find hilarious about Elvis is he would sing anything you put in front of him. Like, I mean, literally, there are recordings of Elvis where, like, how on earth did he not get 20 seconds into this? Like, fellas, we're not gonna get 20. I have this record called Elvis's Greatest Shit. That's a bootleg of 30 most unforgivable Elvis performances of all time. And they're unbelievable. They're racist. They're deplorable. They're unbelievably funny and bad. Like, Old MacDonald. He sings Old MacDonald Had a Farm with, like, full horn section. And it's a joke.
Oh,
it's
my
like,
God.
When those ducks gone out of line, hamburgers medium rare. Like that. Like, McDonald, like, cooks all the animals that misbehave on his farm. And there's literally a moment where he's going like, I don't ain't going here, and I ain't going there. I mean, it's just like, so there's just no quality control at all. They're just, like, shoving product down people's throats. But the Heiser invent a whole subculture. Like, without Elvis Presley, there's no youth revolution in the United States, and consequently no youth revolution on planet Earth. Like, and that's incredibly
significant. Really? You're saying more so than the Beatles?
Yes, there are no Beatles without Elvis Presley. Without Elvis Presley, the Beatles are singing like skiffle songs on the Liverpool docks and then getting jobs.
I do love no those skiffle songs. I do. Wow. And yeah. and Bob Dylan's relationship to Elvis Presley.
Oh, there's no Bob Dylan without Elvis Presley. No chance. There's no nothing. There's not the. I mean, Elvis is like the first Technicolor star. Like, he's not in control. That's the whole point. Like, when he's doing the Louisiana Hayride and he's dancing back and forth, like, the lack of control is the whole point. Like, every other star up to that point is muted,
measured, and polished.
Every other white star. With the caveat that, of course.
Yeah, no, I know, but I mean, like, when Little Richard's around you, you can't be saying Elvis is the only one out there.
Little Richard is still a niche artist. Like, Little Richard's not on national television until Elvis is on national television, right?
I agree. But that's the duality of it, though. It's like,
oh, I know. We were just talking about it with the Delta. Like, I mean, there's no Elvis Presley that without the life and poverty that allows them to understand how to sing other people's music. Yeah, I mean, the thing that's remarkable about Elvis is, like, he doesn't sound like Pat Boone when he sings the blues. He sounds like he belongs in that space. And it's a crucial hybrid moment. We're going to talk about hybrid in a moment. One of the great hybrid stories of American music is coming up in the next segment. And you don't have that without Elvis creating an authentic white voice in a black vernacular.
Okay, you know? So my next segment, I'm going to scrap. Because your next segment is going to cover Sun City Stax Records to a certain extent.
Yes,
so,
sure.
So you don't have to explain it now because you're going to explain it when you do your pick, is what you're saying.
Okay.
All right, awesome. And let's just go straight to our three songs or events or albums or artists.
Jeff, you're going to do it first?
I'm going to go first because I think I'm setting the table for the rest of you to do all the stuff. All right. So, when I graduated from college, I really didn't have anywhere to go because I didn't have a job waiting at home and I didn't have a job yet. So my plan was to drive around and visit as many people as I could, and hopefully figure out a job along the way, which is exactly what happened, which is lucky because I did not have a plan B. But while in preparation for the drive, this is the days of the Discman. And so you had your little CD sleeves.
Shout out to the Discman.
It was also the height of the CD box set, which is now kind of a relic. But around 89, 90, 91, any artist with any kind of back catalog was getting this big, lavish box set, usually four discs or sometimes five. And it would start with like early demos when they were called like the Squirgly Dergs before they had a name. And then there would be some demos and then the early hits. And then the, you know, discs two and three would be the height. And then disc four was usually fall off the table, like the new stuff, or here's some solo stuff after they broke up, or here's the post rehab song. But they were a thing. And the one I really wanted was this 9-disc. Ridiculously huge, like it weighed like a city bus, and it was the complete Stax Volt singles from 1959 to 1968. It came in this big black box, and I just bought it. I was like, I'm gonna spend the whole summer driving around. I'm gonna listen to this whole damn thing, and I did. I spent 3 months essentially listening to all of the Stax A sides and B sides. Stax is a little studio in Memphis. It was a record store, and in the back there was a recording studio. And this 9-disc box set had something like 300 songs on it. And it was the 150 singles that Stax had put out in chronological order, a shocking amount of which charted. And what's amazing about it is it was kind of like, I mean, my understanding of it that summer, I came to understand it as kind of the anti-Motown. Because Motown is having all of these hits at the same time, too. But Motown is 2 and 4, like clap, 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 clap. There's a tambourine smashed into the mix so you can hear with a clap. And it's definitely soul music for the masses, right? It's soul music for people who don't know where the beat is, who maybe can't dance. The vocals are incredibly well enunciated. The vocals are pushed way out in the front of the mix, and then the band is kind of this thing in the background. And there's wonderful Motown music, but it's a little antiseptic. It's a little stylized so that a huge audience, and Stax has none of that. Stax Volt sounds only like them. Every song, one after another, after another, after another, after another, sounds like the same place played by the same guys, because it is. The house band at Stax. Did you know, Ben, that Duck Dunn is not the original bassist of Booker T and the MGs?
No way. Who is?
Yeah. A guy named Louis Steinberg is the original bassist for Booker T and the MGs, and he quits in 1965. He's on Green Onions. He's on a whole bunch of hits. And I love it. Louis Steinberg is raised Baptist in Memphis. And I want to know the story of how the Steinbergs found their way to the Baptist congregation, but what's amazing about this band is it's a 14-year-old, when it starts, it's a 14-year-old church organist named Booker T. Jones and three of his friends, a drummer, Al Jackson Jr., guitar player named Steve Cropper, and Louis Steinberg, who becomes Donald Duck Dunn. It's an integrated band, two black guys and two white guys, in a city that is defined by racial segregation, racial unrest. And they find a way to make this glorious, like, Southern soul music. If Motown is right on top of the beat, like, dun, 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 Al Jackson Jr. is playing just behind. He's playing the way you play music in a city that's really, really muggy and hot, and everybody wants to dance, but they also want to stay cool. And the snare drum is always just a little bit behind the beat. Bum, 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 bum. So all the songs feel a tiny bit slower than they actually are. And he has this unbelievable fat backbeat. These guys are in no hurry, and they're so economical. There's just every note of every instrument pops out of a Stax Volt single. Like, they're barely playing, and then they're playing like the world's coming to an end, and then they know how to leave space for each other. It's the most spectacularly long relationship between four musicians that got recorded in the 60s, like just one perfect backing track up after another behind a series of just unforgettable singers, which is what you guys are going to cover. But when you listen to all these singers, there's a part of you, even if you're a casual music fan, it's like, boy, there's something really similar about this. And it's this spectacular band, Booker T and the MGs, one of the all-time great rock combos, and I am just an absolute slobbering super fan of these guys. I know these songs so well. I listen to them at such a formative moment. You know, you're 21 years old and you just graduated from college. Like, I know how to play like deep, deep, deep cut B-sides from the Stax catalog because I spent the whole summer listening to them. But I'm going to play a little bit of one of my favorite Booker T grooves, and you'll hear everything that makes the band great. Just the perfect economy of the beat, the way the instruments leave space for one another, the way they mesh with one another. There are several great Booker T instrumentals that charted. Green Onions is the most famous by far, but I'm going to play Hip Hugger, which, depending on the day, I might like even a little bit more. So here's my salute to Memphis, if not the greatest studio band in rock history, definitely in the conversation. Here we go.
That's a good time in that studio.
I mean, yeah. Man,
that's good murder. Stuff. That's
so good. You know, that I do like that better than Green Onion. I do like the Green Onion. The emptiness of it.
Yes.
Like they don't do anything. They do nothing. It's just like they're each playing the tiniest little thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can almost see they're barely moving, like and it's funk music before there's a term for funk music, because space is what makes funk music so powerful. Like the meters don't happen without Booker T and the MGs, and they're not playing funk music yet because it beats too straight to call it funk music. But all of the elements of space and attack and release that make funk music so fabulous, amazing. They're all in here.
And also just the sheer balls of them to just keep recording these random instrumentals for their singer. Fantastic.
Have you ever heard their Beatles cover record? It's called Macklemore Avenue, because that's the street that the studio is on. And the picture is them walking across the cover of Abbey Road. And then they do these just skeletal, super restrained versions of Beatles tunes. It's totally crazy.
That's amazing.
I'm getting that.
So the Soul Finger by the Barkays is a great comparison point to this. Uh-huh. So Soul Finger is also an instrumental, except for the part where they yell Soul Finger over and over again, which is fantastic. But that's so much busier and livelier. And they're Memphis too, right?
Yeah.
The Barkays? Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. That whole scene, so badass, so super likable. First time I went to Memphis, Tennessee, 1991, driving across the country with my brother, and I have my ID and he's got my old ID, and that's how we're going into bars while we're going across the country. So we hit Beale Street and we go in and we're hanging out at the BB King place, which is like a mixed race but mostly white people hanging out listening to blues. The band finishes up, I'm like, let's get out on the street. The whole street's closed down. We go out, and it's one of the first times back in high school in Brooklyn where I was like just surrounded by African American people. Like it was just a sea of black people, and just my brother and I wandering around amongst them. And we had a freaking ball, just an absolute ball. And I was like, oh, Beale Street's all right with me now forever. Then I've been there for work. I stayed at the Peabody for work. That's where the TBA meets when they're in Memphis. And I've gone there to speak at University of Memphis too. It's a tough town. I think it's making some progress, but obviously the last 6 months in Memphis haven't been great. I mean, the freaking police murder was there.
Yeah. Right.
An entirely African American squad killing another black person, just like, and India knows the mayor, obviously. Just unimaginably horrible. And then much less high stakes, but also kind of weird is like the Memphis Grizzlies stuff.
Yeah.
6 months ago, the Grizzlies are the darlings of the NBA. So this is the professional basketball team in Memphis, Tennessee. Typically, everybody goes to LA or Phoenix to train. They all stayed in Memphis for the summer. They all hung out and played together. They're all at Ja Morant, who's the star player's house all summer long. And it was like, it's total amazing feel-good story. And then Ja Morant's on Instagram with a gun. And it turns out that he got in a couple of fights at his house. And now all of a sudden, this great story, they just turn it around to this really horrible story, as if like they're just thugs in Memphis. And it's like a little bit of a story about Memphis itself. The University of Tennessee tries really hard to draw from all three parts of the state. And so we try really, I've had a shit ton of students from Memphis. So I've really gotten to know the town that way. And in discussing this with some of the African-American students I know from Memphis, they're like, Memphis versus everybody, everybody versus Memphis. Like, that's exactly where they're at with it. Huh. Like, there's real tension in the place and tension with the town. But the history there, all that they've accomplished there, I mean, FedEx is there. Like, it's a really amazing blend of different weird things. And also to be the biggest city in the Memphis, in the Delta, you know what I mean? Like to think about the slavery that happened down there, where all that wealth came from, where the Peabody was built from, all of that. It's a really, really, really complex, super likable town. Unbelievable barbecue. So good.
So good.
So good. Went there with my family, took them to Stacks. That was the one place that I was like, that we're seeing that for sure, bar none. Girls absolutely loved it. Because we started our 50 years of music in 1969, we did not get a chance to talk about the great Otis Redding.
Let's go. Let's go.
Born outside Macon, Georgia, has to drop out of school when he's 15 to work as a ditch digger because his dad's got tuberculosis.
Ugh.
He's also trying to make it in music. And the early years of Otis Redding are so unbelievably hilarious. The 18 different bands that he travels with and all of like the talent shows that he's winning. Like he wins $5 and his family can eat that week because of the talent show. He's on what they called the Chitlin' Circuit. That's what he's playing there. First with a band called Patty Cake, which I loved. And then more hopefully with Johnny Jenkins and the Pine Toppers. So Johnny Jenkins is the guitarist and he's the star of the band and he's the named act. And they got, and there's a great picture of them where Johnny Jenkins is up front looking like Chuck Berry, just tearing it up on the guitar. And Otis Redding is like back behind the bassist. Like they got the singer like,
hello,
in the back while Johnny Jenkins is the star. There's an unbelievable song called Shout Bama Lama. That's just Otis Redding screaming over 2.5 minutes of Johnny Jenkins playing guitar. Johnny Jenkins either has lost his license or doesn't have a license. So Otis Redding is the singer in the band and he carries the equipment and he's driving Johnny Jenkins around. Johnny Jenkins introduces him to people as his valet. And so, by the way, this is a little bit of a digital underground Tupac situation. Like this guy, Johnny Jenkins, has Otis Redding in his band working for him. Working for him and does not recognize what he has. Johnny Jenkins gets a tryout at Stax. So, of course, he can't drive. So Otis drives him. He gets in the studio. Johnny Jenkins uses up, is a surly jerk. He's arguing with the owner of Stax and the producer.
Oh, no.
2 hours of studio time. They finish at 90. He's done. The studio guy's like, well, what are we going to do? We got 30 minutes of studio time. Otis Redding's like, I know some songs.
Hey, let's go.
So they cut two songs in 1962. I can't remember the name of the first one, but the guy, Otis Redding, started out as a huge Little Richard fan. And the owner of Stax was like, that's just a Little Richard song. We can't do that. You have anything else? And he's like, yeah,
these songs of
1962. 1962. He just lays that out. That's going to be my selection. Like, there's an amazing story of Springsteen getting signed, where he gets brought into CBS Records. And he's like, you know, he's got the world's greatest band. He's like, when can I come in and bring the band? The guy's like, no, you don't get to bring your band. You're going to come in by yourself with a guitar, no overdubs. You're just going to play all your songs straight up into the mic.
Wow.
Cuts four songs, and they're each better than the last. It's one of the all-time most clutch performances, a live performance. Do you know what I mean? Like, everything is on the line for this guy, and he just nails it. And that's, if not equal to it or above it, is Otis Redding banging out These Arms of Mine. This is one shot.
The song I know was the tryout song?
Yes.
Holy smokes.
And I'm Jeff will know, maybe know better than I do. I think they released it. I think he cut it like, in that half an hour, and they just put it out.
No rehearsals, just boom.
Yeah.
He doesn't even know he's going to record.
No, he's literally driving another guy around. That's why he's there.
And I mean, it is one of the most epic introductions of a voice in music history. Because when the band hits mine with him, good Lord. You ready?
Let's do it.
These arms are mine. They are lonely. Lonely and feeling blue. These arms of mine, they are yearning. Yearning from wanting you.
And I can't even stop listening to
that. I know, right?
So fantastic. And I mean, just to have him, like, that be the first thing that he records, so unbelievably good. As long as we're here, and I'm sure Jeff will back me on this, there's three different really, really, really exceptionally good live recordings of Otis Redding.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them are, the first one's a really funny story. So 62, he records this. They send him up to the Apollo Theater in 1963. And they say, we're going to let Atlantic Records is going to sign you. You're going to get to play on this mixed group of African-American artists playing at the Apollo live. We're going to pay you $400 a week. And he's like, $400 a week? Are you freaking kidding me?
Let's unbelievable. Go.
He shows up at the Apollo and he doesn't get to bring his own band. So he goes in and he's like, I can't believe it. Where's my $400? And they're like, I don't know. Listen, it's $400 for the week for you to play, but you have to pay for the sheet music. And the sheet music is $450.
What?
Down $50 on the deal. Ben E. King is the biggest guy there, and Otis is crying to him about how he doesn't have any money. He can't even pay the $50. He can't get the sheet music. He can't play the music. And Ben E. King gives him $100 and floats him, and he makes it through to the recording.
Hilarious. Okay.
Then there's the 1966 Whiskey A Go Go.
Yes.
Otis is not the only person doing this, but he's one of the first African-American soul people to really be reaching out to a white audience. So he goes and plays at a rock club in L.A. And how many nights does he do? Three nights? Four nights?
He does three nights, but he does three shows on three nights. So it's nine sets. 940.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Jeff hit me, too. First they released just a single album of it, then more from it. And then now they've released everything. And it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Peak of his powers.
So good. Okay. So good. The band is so unbelievably tight. He's counting things off like randomly in between songs. There's 8-minute versions of songs. Super extra mega awesome. And then the Monterey Pop 1967. And he's just cresting into really worldwide fame before he dies in a plane accident. Like just,
I mean, you make the argument that like for as famous as Hendrix said is at Monterey, like Otis is toe to toe with him. I mean, that's the shake from Live at Monterey is just
really great. Just 50,000
people are screaming shake back at him. It's really unbelievable.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, and the Try a Little Tenderness. The racism these people face. The freaking producers, the owners of the track Try a Little Tenderness, tried to not let Otis release it. They didn't want to have an African American version of that song. It had been sung by Bing Crosby or something. So they were like, we've already got the definitive one. Like, you have ears.
Oh, yeah?
You have ears, people.
Do you want to try?
The thing that's amazing about Otis is the phrasing, right? It's not just that voice. That voice is so undeniable. And it's like, it's funny. Like, I can't define masculinity that isn't toxic. Like I'm not going to bat 1,000 on that. But there's something about Otis's voice so unbelievably masculine without being like an asshole. Like,
totally.
Otis Redding is like, it's one of the most masculine voices I've ever heard that would probably just be like, and what can I do for you, man? Do you need like a beer or like, you need a ride somewhere? Like, it's just friendly at the same time, but it's just so undeniably strong. And the phrasing, if you listen to the backing track of These Arms of Mine, it actually sounds simple. Like, it's like weirdly simple, like that ping, 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 ping. But you have to, because he's floating all over these arms of mine. He's such a brilliant singer around the beat. Even the like Try a Little Tenderness, same thing. Before the band comes in, he is all over the place, which is why the drum has to be like, because I mean, you wouldn't even and that's the beauty of it, is the MGs were like, this guy needs a bed to improv over, and we are not going to get in his way, and we're not going to turn the beat around on him, and we're not going to pull focus. I mean, if you listen to Otis's version of Respect, it's hilarious how driving it is. I mean, it's just like, it's like being hit in the face for 2.5 minutes. It's like, what you want? Huh? You got it. It's amazingly different. It's not even recognizable as the same song, but I kind of think it's equally fantastic. Like, those are just two fantastic versions of that tune. So
awesome.
He's the greatest. He might be my all-time lead vocalist. This is great.
Wow.
That's a bold statement right there. I too had Otis. Ben, I was pulling all these mental gymnastics to justify it in my head. Like, how am I going to
because he's from Georgia, but I'm going to suddenly place him in Memphis. But you did all the work for me. Nice job. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it may not be all of them, but I mean, the bulk of the stuff is recorded in Memphis. I mean,
yeah, right. Oh, yeah, all of it.
Right. All of it. Listeners haven't heard Tramp by Otis Redding. That's so fun.
Really, and Carla Thomas. Don't forget Carla Thomas
is on there.
The brilliant Carla Thomas. Yep. So the other thing about the Yards Arms of Mine is it's Stax's first. It's that's the track that gets them the distribution deal with Atlantic.
Really?
Like, they're just Stax Records. And then they put out that and Ahmet Erdogan is like, what the hell is that? And then they get the whole, they become Stax Volt and they get the whole distribution thing. And because it only hit before These Arms of Mine is Walking the Dog by
The Crown Prince of Dance.
Carla Thomas, Rufus Thomas.
By the way, if you haven't seen a video of Rufus Thomas doing Walking the Dog, or you haven't heard the song Walking the Dog, do yourself a favor and go.
Yeah,
don't walk, run. The best.
Yeah, it's the best. Actually, we'll wait for you. Go ahead and go listen to Walking the Dog.
Yeah, then come back.
This is Rufus's daughter, Carla Thomas. I agree with you. This song is hilarious and great.
Tramp.
What you call me?
Tramp.
Well, you did.
You don't wear continental clothes or Stetson hats.
But I tell you one doggone thing. It makes me feel good to know one thing. I know I'm a lover.
Got an opinion.
That's all right, Mama was. So,
Papa too.
Papa too.
Country.
It's all right.
You straight from the Georgia woods.
That's good.
You know what? You wear overalls, big old broke iron shoes, and you need a haircut, tramp.
Haircut?
I say that's good all the time, and nobody
that's good.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if you do that too, but yeah. That like straight from the Georgia woods. That's good.
The conceited record
all the time.
Is...
When my kids are making fun of me, they're like, you do this and that. I'll be like, that's good. And
that's
I have
good.
No idea what I'm doing.
So Carla Thomas is her dad is Rufus Thomas, and she goes to Tennessee State University and then gets a master's degree at Howard, all while she's settling in as a fantastic singer. And so the conceit of the record is that Otis Redding is like a country bumpkin and she's the high class lady. And that's what all the duets are about. So good. And this is a gargantuan massive hit, but I'm pretty sure there's like two or three other songs that are this identical song on the record.
Oh yeah, totally. Oh, they do like Tramp and like Still a Tramp. And that's the other thing I love about Rufus Thomas. He did like Walking the Dog, Do the Dog, Mama, Where's Your Dog?
Oh, I mean, yeah, totally.
Hilarious. When you own the 9-CD box set of every single,
you get
and
to
every
see all
B-set,
that stuff.
You get all of Rufus's attempts to get another hit single from Dog.
That's like Shakespeare in Love. We'll just do a bit with the dog.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's what sells. All right, gentlemen. It is 9:06.
I can't believe how much better I feel. I was in such a bad mood when we started this podcast. I'm like all better. Thank you, friends.
Nothing like friends and Otis Redding to get us through. Real quick, NCAAs, have you been watching?
Yes. I've certainly been watching my Tennessee Volunteers. Very excited.
And you said they were without their best, one of their best players, right?
Yeah, heart and soul of the team, Zakai Ziegler. Long Island / Queens native Zakai Ziegler. He's the leading assist man, not on the team, but in the entire SEC, on a team with a terrible offense, and he blew out his knee.
Oh, so God.
That's been a little bit problematic. The defense is still fantastic, and they meant, you know, the defense was so smothering that they beat the first two guys pretty easily, including just humiliating Duke, which made me so happy.
Woo!
I forgot
how much humiliating Duke.
Although
I would say that Ben is right, and he won't take credit for this, but I will tell her that he is right that the real problem of the tournament is that nobody can shoot. I'm watching so much bad offense. Like, I cannot believe what a clank fest. I watched a game the other day that had two wedgies within like a minute and a half. Like,
oh, the ball just got stuck.
Yeah, let's get some shot doctors into some basketball gyms this summer. Like, it's really shocking how many wide open, like set, move up, and like there have been air balls. Like,
yeah, there was
clangy bang bang.
there's a fast break. It was 3-on-1, and the guard, you know, the shooter goes to the corner, and the guard pushes, then dishes it out to the corner. The guy's wide open. He hit the side of the backboard. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe should have gone with a layup there.
It's amazing. The seating is not nearly as indicative. I mean, Purdue looked awful. FDU beat them like – and Princeton looks like they should have been a 3 seed. They
oh, my God.
Both their games, they were not in doubt. That second round Princeton game, they were tougher. They out-rebounded them. They shot better. They were more muscular on the ball. I was just like, what the hell am I watching? Like,
oh, it was amazing. They ran them out of the gym.
Yeah.
Ran them out of the gym. It was over with 8 minutes left. I mean, I just couldn't even believe it.
It was pretty embarrassing, actually.
Yeah.
Ben, who's Tennessee got next?
Seth Davis is like, you know, oh no, Jay Wright was like, you know, that Ivy League basketball, like, don't sleep on it. I'm like, oh, we're sleeping on Ivy League basketball. But a team with 4 losses in the Ivy League should not do that in the tournament to somebody else. Like,
We have Florida Atlantic Thursday night. It's a pretty fortunate draw, right? We got nine playing 16 to play us. Florida Atlantic looks for real, though. They've only had losses, and they're big and athletic. I was not super enthused. We're only a 5.5-point favorite over them. So
okay.
And I think on the other side, it's Michigan State, K-State, maybe. On the other side,
K-State, by the way, my pick to win the whole thing.
Is that right? Really? I'm not going to be rooting for K-State. No way.
You spooked me out of picking Tennessee because you're like, we lost our best player. It's horrible. Dude. I was going to pick the Vols all the way.
But you definitely should not have done that. We can lose any night. Dahlia was like, my daughter Dahlia, when we were talking about FAU versus FDU, she was like, you must be really excited. Maybe we got a really good chance. I was like, dude, you've seen us, right? we could lose at any time. One of the reasons that we killed Duke is that our senior center from Finland, which I love, the Finnish assassin, randomly went nuts and hit like 8 threes and scored 27 points all of a sudden.
There you go.
Career high. There you go. But that's not reproducible. I've watched this kid for 4 years. That will not happen again.
Well, I cannot wait for a little more basketball this weekend. And I think with our next podcast, it may be New Orleans, Louisiana, because Clint Smith is coming to speak to our students on Wednesday. He's going to come to my classes on Thursday. He's got a new book of poetry coming out next week. I figure this is a prime moment for his career to come on to our podcast and be the artist from New Orleans.
That would be just fine with me.
Dig
New Orleans not a big music town, though. That's going to be a hard one.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. What's going to be tough is he's an Arsenal fan, and that's going to be difficult talking to him.
I will say you opened the show with a song by the Hold Steady, and I just want to say that my new single is dedicated to Craig Finn. The Hold Steady.
Yes.
Listeners, if any of you know Craig Finn, will you please get my single in his hands? Because I'm dying to know what he thinks of it. And so far, my attempts to bug him on social media have been unsuccessful.
You know who knows him is Brian Koppelman. So I will I'll make sure Brian hears your song and maybe he could get it to Craig. Sweet.
That would be great.
Dig it.
Look at us. Things happen. All right, guys. Have a great week.
Well done, my brothers.
See you down the road.
Yep.
Peace.
Thanks, friends. That was great.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Mile, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the WannaBet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but WannaBet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, Roger.
Electric Acid.
Introducing the Deep Leadership Podcast. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former submarine officer who spent 22 years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters.
Leadership matters.
Deep Leadership is real-world, actionable leadership advice from John and his expert guests. Become a leader worth following. Subscribe today.
Electric Acid. Electric Acid.